A new collection of Bill Manhire poems is undoubtedly an event, even if our first poet laureate includes a very backhanded compliment on the cover. Being the leading poet in New Zealand is like being the best DJ in Estonia. Bill always struck me as being one of our most musical poets, and not just because of the gig Tell Me My Name with singer Hannah Griffin a few years ago, or because once on Matinee Idol we roped him in to critique the poems of Moody Blues drummer Graham Edge. Bill's new collection has a musical connection too. Borrowing from a Kate Bush title, it's called Wow, and it's full of gems and, Bill says, several desperate jokes.
Wow. Big Brother says also, but the baby always says wow. Though soon enough she too is saying also, and listening to her father say later, and to the way her mother sighs and says, now would also be a very good time. The ghost would love to say also, but cannot actually say anything aside from that quiet whooshing sound, and now there are babies everywhere, all saying wow for a time, and the children grow, and the children grow, and the wife goes off for a bit of a break, and never comes back. Also, the lawn gets away on him, one thing after another.
Bill Manhire, welcome to the show.
Hey, Simon.
Jokes and poems do have things in common, don't they? I mean, they both try and strip down life to its bare essentials.
Yeah, I've always thought that jokes have their place in the world, you know, of art, whether it's high art or low art or any kind of art.
It's about making you look at things a different way, isn't it? And I'm sure that that's what you're doing every time you put pen to paper.
Yeah, well, I think one of the poets I really admire, New Zealand poets, is Dennis Glover. Mm. And he could write Sings Harry with one hand and the Magpies with another, and then he could find a third hand and write little satirical squibs. Mm. And I imagine he would have stood up and fought for all of those activities and not said, just see me as the Sings Harry poet, see me as these other things as well.
And I noticed that music features quite a lot, actually, in this collection. I mean, I'm looking at the folk music in To Be Continued and the Bad Band in Noah, which I thought was rather intriguing. And once I started with the idea of looking for musical references, there's an awful lot in there.
Yeah, I think there is. I mean, every poet is every male poet, shall we say, is a failed rock musician, of course. So, you know, that's part of what one does. And I've enjoyed writing lyrics for songs with Norman Meehan and Hannah Griffin. But one of my favourite definitions of poetry is by the French poet Paul Valéry. And he says somewhere, a poem is a prolonged hesitation between sound and sense. And I take that to mean that the poem is a prolonged hesitation between its musical behaviour and meaning. And I think a lot of poems, a lot of the poetry I love, Yeats, for example, or, you know, Glover,
right.
Does hover between those two things and will sometimes reach to music and not give a stuff about what the words mean, and sometimes will reach to what the words mean because that is crucial.
You do a lovely poem in there that's a gag on Kubla Khan, basically, and that's a little bit about what you're talking about there, I think.
Yeah. People always say, oh, Kubla Khan, it means nothing, it's just music.
Mm-mm.
Of course, it means a great deal if you pay attention to it, but it is terrific soundscape.
Fantastic soundscape. How much of Wow has been inspired by the year of the lockdown?
There are a few poems in there. There's one called Isolation Notes, which is just notes that I took watching the world go by, like the cat having a great time among the birds,
and right.
that sort of thing. There's one where I imagine what it might be like after lockdown, as people turn on or dismiss or let go those who were important to them during lockdown.
It was an interesting time, wasn't it? Because it was enforced consideration.
Yeah, and I think at the moment you can probably divide New Zealand into the 80% of people who are terrifically grateful for how we were managed and led through the whole process, and the other 20% who were angry and not grateful and not at all generous in their thinking or behaviour.
I remember when we had you on Matinee Idol, you were extremely dismissive of the works of Graham Edge, saying that there were too many rhymes. I'm looking through your book of poetry. You're no stranger to the rhyme, are you?
No, I like rhyme. I like rhyme.
Mm.
I think more than that, I like repetition. And so you can repeat a whole line and get a kind of incantatory feeling going like that. Or you can do the rhyming, the play of sound against sound. I think they're all terrifically interesting. But again, that's musical, of course.
Well, speaking of music, you know, they always say it's not the notes, it's what you leave out. And I noticed that it's quite striking how short many of your poems are. And looking you up, it's patently obvious that that's been a thing of yours forever. I mean, do you think brevity is the soul of poetry?
Well, you know, there are some people who say the point of writing poems is to try and stop time. So maybe that's why people go for the haiku or very, very short poems. And New Zealanders are actually good at short poems. There's a fantastic anthology edited by Jenny Bornholtz, short poems by New Zealanders.
I think we're very good at short everything. Yeah, we make good short films. We make good short stories. It's just a thing that we seem to do.
Yeah.
You open with, if you like, a song or a poem from an extinct bird. This is Huya. What inspired that one?
Well, that was actually a commission. I got commissioned by the New Zealand singer who lives in London, without many opportunities to sing, Julian Van Mallet. And he was commissioning Gareth Farr to write some songs about New Zealand birds. And so I was hauled into this to produce the words. We seemed to go for birds that were either in danger or so much in danger they were extinct.
Right.
And so Huia was written actually as a song lyric.
There's something mystical about an extinct bird. There's something mystical about something that nobody around has ever seen, isn't there?
Yeah, and there's just that little... There's a man, isn't there, who was able to imitate what he said was the sound of the huia. And Radio New Zealand occasionally play this man whistling the huia sound, and that's all we've got.
Oh, my goodness.
Apart from all the stuffed huia in European museums and New Zealand museums and so on.
Another thing in this collection is you give babies a voice more than once. I mean, what is that about exactly?
I don't know. It might have something to do with turning into a grandfather a few years ago.
But, well, old men and babies are featuring a lot.
So the babies keep coming. But I think I got it into my head, not because I planned to, but just by accident, that babies come into the world and all they can do really is say wow to this extraordinary experience. Mm. And the world, you know, parents and grandparents will say, wow, straight back to the baby.
But that's fascinating because everyone who's ever had any connection with a baby, that's the reaction you're looking for all the time, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know, you try and get them to go, whoa.
Yeah, and I think that's the reaction you want from a great work of art as well. I mean, if I look at a great Ralph Hawtrey canvas, if it's any good, it says wow to me and I say wow to what it's doing to me, you know.
I notice also you have little bits of sci-fi in there. There's a wonderful poem called Discontinued Product.
Oh, that's it's a sort of 1950s robot, really. A sort of failing robot.
It kept dropping letters a bit as the thing went on. It was like the robot in 2001, wasn't it? You know, closing down.
Yeah.
I see that the collection has been divided into three distinct sections. And when I was reading them, I was thinking, these do go together, but I couldn't put my finger on what it was that was making each section distinct. Can you cast any light on that?
Well, you kind of go on your nerves, so it wasn't prescriptive, but I would say that the first section is very much, somehow it opens with the huia singing of its own abandonment, as it were, its own loss. And the other poems in that first section tend to be environmental or poems that are worried about climate change, I suppose, to put it crudely. And then the second section, because that seemed a bit solemn and distressing.
There's a lot of jokes in the second section.
A lot of feeble jokes in the second section. And then the third section comes back to some quite serious stuff about ageing and what the world might have in store for people my age.
What is the role of poetry in such dramatically bad times as the one we're going through right now? I mean, is it to comfort or to alarm or to, you know, take you somewhere else?
Well, I think your first two suggestions seem very different, but they're the same function somehow. You do want to alarm people in terms of how the world is going, but also you want to offer a bit of comfort. Remember, there was that, which Auden poem was it when 9/11 happened? Everybody was chasing this particular W.H. Auden poem because it somehow gave comfort. It was one of the early love poems. I've got a little poem at the very end of this book.
I was going to ask about it because it's almost a postscript. It finishes with one poem that feels very elegiac. And then you turn the page and there's another little one. There's one called Little Prayers.
Yeah, well, it's, I sort of put it in the book as a sort of hidden track or a secret track at
That's
the end.
Exactly, you know, what I thought it was, yeah.
Another music thing. But I wrote that the day after the terrorist shootings in Christchurch, and I posted it on Twitter the next day, and it sort of went viral on Twitter, and I believe did the same on Facebook and Instagram.
It's a beautiful piece.
And it's a poem about how we need to think about ourselves in order to have a life that's worth living. I mean, that was just my reaction. So it's a poem which I guess is meant to make us be a bit more scrupulous about our behaviour, but also is designed to comfort. If only we can do better, we deserve some comfort.
Does that take you back to your Poet Laureate days, where you're meant to be reacting to big issues by and then saying, here's your poem? There's a phrase that they use when a king dies or a war breaks out or something, and you trot the Poet Laureate out and say, go on, capture that, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, do you respond well to that sort of thing, or do you prefer to have stillness and let it come?
I didn't used to respond well to that at all. Mm. But I remember when I came back to New Zealand after a period out of the country, and I'd got this sense when I was Poet Laureate that there was some duty to step into the public space and say things. Occasionally I got brave. But I got a phone call from Peter Beck, who was at Christchurch Cathedral then. And he said, oh, I'm going down to Antarctica with Sir Edmund Hillary, and there's going to be a service there for the Erebus victims. Sir Ed says he'll take part in the service, but he's not a Christian believer and doesn't want any Christian text to write. Would you write a poem for him, because you've been to Antarctica? And I just said, oh, yeah. And then, you know, I wrote a poem and I'm proud of it, and I heard him read it on the 6 o'clock news. They recorded it and he gave it heaps. And I realised then that actually you can write something that steps into that public world, that gives comfort, that acknowledges grief, and yet is still a good poem.
That's... You had a very rare experience for a poet where you got somebody great to cover it. I mean, it's like written a song and Frank Sinatra sings it or something like that, and that hardly ever happens, but it happened to you.
Yeah, absolutely. The nice thing about that was someone sent me an article that had been printed in the press just before he went down, and they said, what are you going to be doing in Antarctica, Sir Ed? He said, oh, well, I'll be doing this and I'll be doing that, and I'm going to read this poem that Bill Manhire wrote for me. And then he said, which I quite like, actually. So that's my top comment.
Is that your best review?
Yeah, best review ever, yeah. This is a poem called He Loved Her Lemonade Scones, and I need to explain that I wrote it when Colin Meads died, and on the television news there were some shots of people at his wake. Some ancient friend of Colin Meads was asked why Colin fell in love with his wife, and the answer was, he loved her lemonade scones. So this poem is called He Loved Her Lemonade Scones. They fell in love between the end of the footy season and the start of shearing. Sheep gazed bewildered. The paddocks stretched up into the hills, mostly scrub and a few old stands of bush. Now listen here, he said. That was it, really.
It's Bill Manhire, whose new collection of poetry, Wow, is published by Victoria University Press.